capitalism. Footnote 39, text. The main conceptual refinement Adorno added in this context was the already mentioned shift in emphasis to the technological veil spread by the logic of administration as the fullest subsumption of reality under the form of fetishism. For Adorno, too, the immediate objective facts of fully developed civil or bourgeois society constitutes a second nature. The thing-like facts of this administered second nature, facts that administrative research copies, hide not only social relations but specifically human relations of domination and control. All unreflective empirical research by fetishizing the false consciousness that adheres to the frozen immediacy of given factuality serves the technocratic interest of control. Footnote 40, text. Page 199. The alternative of a critical theory of culture is therefore indicated by the category of defetishization, or even more generally, by mediation. The category of mediation, which both Lukács and Adorno discuss extensively, is the locus classicus of the difference between the revolutionary optimism of the former and the profound critical pessimism of the latter. Adorno's definition of ideology and critique can best be understood in terms of this difference, one that we would like to explore. Here is what will restrict ourselves for the sake of the clearest contrast to Lukács' 1923 position. Ultimately grounded in the myth of the proletariat and Adorno's late antinomic view based on the dissolution of all mythology. One, Adorno, like Lukács, always accepted the notion that mediation must be grounded in the essential nature of the object itself. Footnote 41. Text. But where Lukács, like the early Adorno, understood this object in the sense of a unified, dynamic, social totality that comes to practical self-consciousness in revolutionary theory, in the late Adorno, the unity and identity of the object itself is in doubt. On the one hand, Adorno reproduces a rather static version of the historical materialist premises that the relationship of economic base and superstructure is presented in all ideology. On the other hand, he insists that we can have knowledge of total society only in the form of mycology, that is, through the intensive critical examination of single, totalized work in art and philosophy. Mediation, then, in the form of transcendent critique, is the totalization that locates works in a social totality, economically structured but without a future-oriented dynamic. This totality, the Gesamttotalität, is therefore false. The whole is untrue. Of course, the false whole does exist as the social totality totalized by the means of total administrative, bureaucratic, or even totalitarian practice. Footnote 42, text. Mediation in the form of mycology, in the form of an immanent critique that has not forgotten its interest in a future-orientated transformation of the false whole of society, is therefore the only possible avenue for a conceptual unfolding that involves a dynamic relation of subject-object in Lukács' sense. 2. Of course, Adorno's bleak picture of the Gesamttotalität presupposes one crucial anti-Lukaschian premise, the non-existence of a social Gesamtsubjekt of action. Footnote 33, text. The human beings of the administered world of fragmented subjects, of damaged intersubjective knowledge that cannot constitute genuine intersubjectivity of action, collective subject from the traces of meaning in the rubble of objective spirit. While in the 1930s the proletariat was for him still the potential revolutionary subject, the late Adorno only had profound fear for the emergence of a collective subject composed of the human fragments of today. Page 200. The Lukashian project of a mediation or defetishization in which revolutionary theory is met halfway by the self-mediation or self-defetishization of reality in the emergence of class consciousness collapses in Adorno's work. 3. Therefore, Adorno could not admit an objectively possible identity of theoretical mediation and the practical self-mediation of the addressees of theory, and hoped only for a parallel and incomplete mediation of micrological theory and those of its objects that themselves incorporate the project of critique that is autonomous work of art. Where Lukács, in the manner of Hegel, mediates reification toward subject-object identity. Adorno's mediation through the extremes does not lead beyond autonomy, beyond unresolved contradiction. The micrological analysis of antinomic objects in a common field, the extremes of modern music, for example, may unfold the idea behind each object until the inherent consequences of the object is transformed into their self-criticism, but no overcoming of the initial antinomy is thereby achieved. Footnote 44, text. We must stress here that Adorno from the early 1930s on insisted on the cognitive function of great works of art. Footnote 45, text. Beethoven's achievement, for example, is often compared to Hegel's. Footnote 46, text. The method of each is characterized as the unfolding of a dynamic totality, but in a period in which Hegel's theoretical object is portrayed as untrue. Footnote 47, text. Adorno was forced to re-evaluate the limits of possible cognition in both art and theory. To hold on to their essential cognitive function, both must appear as negative, as critique. In both art and theory, the successful work is not one which resolves objective contradiction in a spurious harmony, but one which expresses the idea of harmony negatively by embodying the contradictions pure and uncompromised in its innermost structure. Footnote 48, text. No lines offer a better characterization of Adorno's own self-understanding. When he moves from critique to self-critique in the great essay, Cultural Criticism and Society, footnote 49, text, he too is able to express the harmony and unity of critical theory only negatively, but by the dialectical antinomic juxtaposition of the thoroughly criticized poles of immanent and transcendent modes of ideology critique. The concept of ideology has a long and contradictory history. Footnote 50, text. With the Marxian tradition. Footnote 51, text. The best known version is that in the German ideology, which reduces ideology to the ideas of the ruling class composed of falsehood or inverted truth to be measured against the truth of science. Neither this definition nor Engels' revision in terms of reciprocal influences between superstructure and base was useful in the Frankfurt theorists. Footnote 52, text. Page 201. What they took for Marx instead was the increasingly uneasy combination of ideology as normative, true, and empirically false consciousness. Marx in 1843 especially, and of ideology as objectively and socially necessary illusion. Fetishism, the Marx of the mature critique of political economy. Herbert Marcuse, for example, uses both of these concepts in his 1937 essay, Affirmative Culture. The first of the extent that he juxtaposes and confronts the true utopian and the false legitimating affirmative moments of art. And the second to the extent that he hopes to resolve the contradiction of art by the total social revolutionary abolition of social necessary illusion, opening the way to a new culture based on the unity of art and life. The second move especially firmly locates the critical theory of the 1930s within the realm of Lukacian Marxism. For Lukács, too, the dialectic of true and false consciousness implied the same two notions of ideology. One, the images of subject-object identity reconciliation in German classical philosophy from Kant and Fichte to Hegel and Schiller, where truth that turned into falsehood when the philosophers on the basis of conceptual mythologies mistook theory for reality. Two, the empirically correct and rational presentation of social appearances, phenomena, in political economy represented truth in a limited empirical sense, truth that turns out to be false when mediation discovers the distortion of the past, present, and future dynamic historical contexts of these truths. The two notions of ideology are linked together by Lukács in that process of mediation that reveals the objectively possible aspiration of empirical reality to the heights of thought. For Adorno, as we have seen, it is just this process of mediation toward identity that falls apart. According to him, under late capitalism, ideologies in a genuine sense collapse and give way to the antinomic alternatives of critical thought, illusionless but impotent, and mere reduplication in consciousness of the world of administered controls. Footnote 53, text. Adorno locates his own difficulty in defining ideology precisely in the administered world. He gives us at least three definitions, and each fares different in the present historical context. 1. Ideology is objectively necessary and at the same time false. Consciousness, true, because it is a rational, scientific or social scientific expression of the established state of affairs. False, because it is not the whole truth of that state of affairs, suppressing its history, its interest structure, and so on. Footnote 54, text. 2. Ideologies in the genuine sense are ideals and norms true in themselves, but false in their pretensions to be already realized. Footnote 55, text. For example, the idea of justice as more than just equivalent exchange. Page 202. 3. Ideologies that are not such in the genuine sense are mere reduplication of the existing reality. They appear when purely immediate relations of power predominate. Adorno means here not so much reduplication in the sense of conceptual copy that could still have a moment of rational representation, but irrational ideas, for example, fascism, that are mere instruments of power in a world in which everything is instrumentalized. Footnote 56 text. Such a world has no ideology, but is